Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, no fanfare, no music, no jingling in your face there with the, you know, with all of the music and, you know, all the things jumping around and none of that. We'll have that later. You listened to this show before, then you remember that stuff. But not today. Today is just me in a hurriedly constructed studio with an auxiliary audio panel. But I'm here. 30 minutes of just raw information that you always used to hear from me. Excuse these little tippity taps on my mouse there because I'm opening something for you to see or to hear from me. You're no doubt, if you're familiar with the show, expecting me to talk about all the stuff that's been going on in the headlines. Well, okay. So once you get that stuff going, it's hard to talk about anything else, really. So let me give you a short timeline. This is a good place to start and to carry it over until next time. A timeline of what's been happening. Okay, so this heretofore little-known political party was established, you know, like 15, really 20 or 30 years ago, but in earnest about 15 years ago. And it wasn't really an official party, but it was very much part of the fabric of the political discourse in this country. And it gained more and more power because more and more of the uneducated electorate, those that are easy prey for xenophobia and fear, they gravitated toward this. Interesting note that it was elements of the government, provocateurs hired by the government, our government, basically created this political party originally to draw out the bully types and the rabble-rousers, the ones that they were hoping to see who the problem children were. And so they created a party that would attract them. Well, it succeeded. Okay, so there's this party, right? This is the beginning of the timeline. And the party gains power, more and more and more influence. The media, in the meantime, is manipulated by those with a considerable amount of money who are very sympathetic to maintaining this political party because it suits them in achieving their goals, manipulation of the populace as well as manipulation of the media, and that's what they've been doing. And it plays on fears. All of the manipulation is there to make sure that we continue to stir the pot and play on people's fears whenever possible. Of the two major parties in this country, everyone looked to the conservative side of things, the conservative party, to kind of put a stop to this. It seemed as though they had their ear more than the liberal party did. But they didn't. They didn't stop it. It continued. And then, while the president was crisscrossing the country, holding rallies everywhere, his followers would, you know, the people that would go to these rallies and the ones that even that didn't, the ones that were just here, you know, in this country, would disrupt the political system. And they more and more, as they became more and more emboldened, started to use intimidation tactics to gain momentum. A side development of this is that those same, actually, it's not really a side development, but in the meantime, there's a development that involves the same people with the really deep pockets who really want this destabilizing political party to do well because it furthers their goals and it destabilizes unions, which destabilizes wage earnings, which makes them more money. Those same people created a financial environment and a labor environment that eroded very rapidly any kind of a liberal middle class. So there's no liberal middle class party anymore, certainly not one that's strong enough to stop them in their goals. And of those that are left, they've sold out, and you can't really tell them from the ones on the conservative side. Okay. So now the left and the right, they're busy jostling for position amongst one another to come together to stop, now not all of them, but some of them, to stop the encroaching danger of what they see as potentially an impending dictatorship. The marginalized people, right? People that aren't white, people that aren't, card-carrying citizens of the country, mistreated by the leader. I mean, horribly mistreated. But even though they don't trust him, those that have a political identity among them still felt that they're, you know, they feel their constitutional rights are certainly safe. I mean, they at least have that. Except that more and more orders and probationary laws are passed, giving this leader the power to dispose of the need to receive authorization from Congress to enact laws upon manipulating the appointees within the government to name him president. He then had the military swear an oath to be loyal to him personally. The only part of this that doesn't sit with you right now, it's factual, is that very last line. Because it's the only one that hasn't happened yet. And everything that I just told you, I read from my screen. And all of it is the story of the rise to power of Adolf Hitler. You think about that for a fucking minute. If you don't think there's parallels, because there are. And we're just scratching the surface. You should be afraid. You shouldn't just be concerned. You should feel a sense of urgency, like, I got to do something. What do I do? Not just sit here, type on the keyboard back and forth to each other about, we're such good people. I'm so glad we see things the same way. He's horrible. Well, that's right. All of that's correct. Any conservative friends that you've had or still have that aren't like this, you have to talk to them. You just do. You have to talk to them and ask them what they're willing to do. How are they willing to get together in numbers and say, nope. Not in my country. Not going to happen. They have to. Because you can go to a protest and you can go to a rally and you can go to this and that. And of those people that you're there with, none of you are in power. You're just exercising your right to holler. But now what you've got to do is you've got to get through to the people that you feel like you don't want to talk to anymore, like the lines have been drawn, and fuck you people, I can't talk to you, so, you know, I'm not going to be nice about this anymore. Well, then we're done. It's just a matter of waiting for the slide. If that's how it's going to be, then we're done. You don't have to be nice to people that are advocating what amounts to eventual genocide. You don't have to be nice, but you don't. If you don't enter into a dialogue with them, even if it's to yell at them, as long as you can show them where this goes, that's the thing. Where does this go? Not today. We know where it goes today, okay? The whole thing with the border and all the brown people coming up from Central and South America, it's mostly not Mexicans. It's people that are coming from chiefly from Guatemala, which we've destroyed with our corporate policies and our mercenary policies. We hire mercenaries to enforce the will of the corporations down there. Those people pay the price. We've destroyed Guatemala's ecosystem. It is beyond repair ecologically. They have nowhere left to live. And of those places where they still live, they are under constant threat from what is a deteriorating society, warlords and drug cartels. So they're being snatched up off the street and forced to do the bidding of these people so that they can make money. And if they don't, they die and their whole family gets tortured. So what do? They grab their kids and say, honey, let's go. And they start walking. 1,500 miles, whatever it takes, to get to somewhere where they don't have to deal with that. They don't know where, but they think maybe America's our best bet. They're desperate. We created the mess, and here they come. Just like we helped create the mess in the Middle East. If they could walk across the ocean, they'd be here too. It's our mess. Honduras, does anyone, I'm a little older, does anyone remember what went on in Honduras? Late 70s, all through the 80s, into the early 90s. Largest military base ever constructed by the United States military, ever. All right, in the Central American theater of operation, we still have people there. It's never talked about, ever. Media blackout. But the largest military base we ever built, still there. Still there. We put a lot of people down there, ostensibly for the drug war, which we weren't fighting. We were running the drug operation, all the north, right? You give them all that weapons that they want to, you know, have a dictatorship down there and run their, play their little, you know, military control game. And the drugs come up here and they get sold and money is made. Guns for drugs. Ollie North went to prison for that under Reagan. He did it from inside the White House. On a telephone in the White House, he ran that operation. This is not a new game. Well, the mess that we've left in Honduras has those people running for their lives still because it's so unstable. That problems haven't stopped. They just keep coming this way because they don't know where else to go. They can't go to Bolivia. They can't go south. There's nothing there. So where's the food? Where's the medicine? It's here. These aren't people coming for, you know, a holiday where they could live high off a hog and say, oh, screw you, Whitey. I'm going to, you know, live on your street. They're coming here because they have no other choice. Some of them don't make it. They die in the desert. They just die. Some of them kill themselves because they watch their children die on the way or they get attacked. They can run into any number of people. If they make it here, they're hoping to just get in here. And even if they get in trouble for crossing illegally over the border, or asking for asylum, that at least they're here. No one's going to shoot at them. They'll have some kind of food. Someone will give their kid medication and treatment and some type of regimentation like school or whatever. That's what they're going for. That's what they want. Decent life. We could adopt a policy very easily, by the way. It isn't that hard. It really isn't. If you're not hell-bent on profit, you can adopt a policy where you go to these countries in our hemisphere to the south of us and say, hey, let's work together. Let's make your streets and your towns look like ours. Let's get rid of the drug war, which is largely manufactured artificially. If we made drugs, for the most part, legal, they wouldn't come in illegally. We wouldn't have the type of people we deal with in places like Juarez that you don't want to deal with. Trust me. That wouldn't happen. It wouldn't exist. Because we'd get rid of the problem just by stroking a pen. It's far more profitable for a very few people to keep it the way it is than it is to simply change the policy. And don't wait for them to come to us. Go to them. There's a workforce there. There's potential taxpayers there. There's great people who just want a decent life. If we give them an environment where they can earn, they'll surprise you. They'll rise to the occasion. And they'll say, this is amazing. We have a school. We have a water treatment plant. We have roads. We have a hospital. We work for XYZ Widget Company from Boise, Idaho. Why not? You want to strengthen, instead of putting tariffs on everything, you want to strengthen our economy? Then tap into all of this labor. Don't pay them like you pay them when they're illegal aliens, because that's who's at fault, not them. It's the guy running the company here at XYZ Widgets in Boise, Idaho, who hires 10 workers from Guatemala because he knows that if he keeps it off the books, he can pay them all $2 a day and get away with it. As long as he gives them, you know, some place to sleep and some food, he can get away with it. He knows it. They aren't the problem. He is. The guy here in America who owns this company, he's not going to pay you that wage of $15 an hour. He's going to pay them $5 an hour and get away with it. So we're all hot and bothered to start blaming all of these people who are simply desperate and running from a problem that we created. We did. And we got to own up to it. We got to own this. Why we don't have a policy of going to them and establishing an economic foothold there, working with their government, working with their people, and making their lives look a lot like our lives. It would strengthen our national security. It would strengthen our economy. And you know what? It's the right thing to do. It's compassionate. It's compassionate. Isn't that who we're supposed to be? I mean, I was raised in the America of the Peace Corps, where we at least made an attempt. We, you know, it's never been any different. In the whole time the United States has existed, 26 years out of our existence have been war-free, free of war. 26 years out of the whole time we've existed since 1776. So we've been in the business of killing people and creating situations where people get killed for a long damn time. The only reason wars are ever fought is for money. And if you think it's any other reason, like, you know, liberating the downtrodden or whatever, you are full of shit and you haven't read history. It's about money. For future reference, and if you happen to see it online in front of you, there is a call-in line here. In case you don't see it, it's 646-668-2496. Again, that's 646-668-2496. If you ever wanted to call in, we've got about 10 minutes left in the show, so you're free to do that. But it just bears being said, and it bears repeating, that the only reason things are the way they are is because a very few people make a whole lot of money. And I'm willing to bet that if you're listening to this, it isn't you. It certainly isn't me. These are people who don't care about you or your kids or anybody else. They only want the bottom line. They want to make that money. And they don't care how they do it. They don't care who dies and who suffers. They just don't. They are soulless and they are heartless. Now that I've cheered you up, when capitalism dies, and it's in the process of dying in the United States, it is. You can say that you disagree with that, but really it's true. It takes a long time for a system to really just die. And a lot of dominoes have to fall, okay? But what happens is that inexorably it does die, because democracies tend to run on capitalism, right? And we're not really a democracy. We're a constitutional republic. But we are run democratically. So technically we're a democracy. Democracies tend to run on capitalism. Capitalism has a shelf life. It does not last forever. Prices keep going up and up and up. And so there's only so many decades in the business model before it implodes, okay? That's why if you've ever worked in business or ever had, if you've got an MBA or you've ever been in retail, and they always say, what's today's figure? Today's figure is always 10% over what it was that day last year. In other words, if we don't make 10% more, right, in our net bottom line, today than we did this day last year, then we failed. Even if making the same amount, or potentially even less than that day last year, still puts you in profit, you failed if you don't grow the business, quote unquote. That has failure written all over it, because even if you meet those numbers, it can't go forever. It just can't. Because you end up, you know, 20 or 30 years later, anybody that's been around a while could tell you, in the 1970s, what used to cost you $5 now costs you about, you know, depending on what it is, it could cost you $27. That can't go forever. Eventually, you get what you had in Argentina, you know, where you had people with wheelbarrows full of money. Inflation was so bad that to buy a loaf of bread, you had to pay like, you know, $74 for one loaf of bread. Well, wages didn't move that much. Sound familiar? Everything keeps getting expensive, but your wages, they don't really go up. Not really. So you're screwed. And so it starts to implode. It caves in. It dies. And it eats itself. It cannibalizes itself. And the only people that are going to make money on that are the people that see it coming, that already have ass loads of money. And they're going to make more money on these losses, right? They're going to play the market in such a way that they actually make money on the deal. So on your pain and suffering, they will make money. They make money on the private prisons. You know, they make money on everything that has to do with the system eating itself. And when capitalism dies, when capitalistic societies start losing their business model because it's eating itself, they devolve into what's called fascism, which is defined as corporations and governments working together so you can't distinguish one from the other, and an oligarchy, a group of very powerful people with all the money. Hello, sound familiar? They, oligarchs, run fascist regimes, right? It happened to Germany. It happened to Argentina. It happened to all these countries that ran capitalistic societies and then just ran it until it puked. And once it puked, it devolved into, you know, authoritarian hellholes until somebody invaded them and tried to set things right. Sometimes it worked. Sometimes it didn't work. South America didn't work so well. They were invaded. It didn't really fix a whole lot. But there are extenuating reasons for that. It did work in Germany. Japan was a little different, but Germany was a good example of an authoritarian regime they didn't invade Germany to help those poor people. They invaded Germany to set the economic landscape back to the way it should have been because the central bankers weren't having it. It's all about money. It wasn't about saving the Jews. It wasn't about saving the other Europeans, the Russians. It wasn't. It was just, no, this is too unstable and we got to put things back. That's why they want Syria. That's why they want North Korea. That's why they wanted, you know, Gaddafi in Libya. That's why all these countries, boom, ba boom, ba boom, they all had to be taken out and changed back to the central banking system because the people with all the money get nervous. And when they get nervous, they unleash the big ugly dogs, open up the cage, and let them loose. And I really feel that's what's about to happen in the United States. If you think it's bad now, I don't think it's as bad as it's going to get. You know, I'm about 6 minutes away from, as I sit in this chair, I'm about 6 minutes away from where they've been, you know, pulling people off the street. ICE units have been pulling people off the street. Some of them have not come back. I'm about 45 minutes away from where they're doing it wholesale in New England on the highways, on the interstate highway system, stopping everybody, holding up traffic for hours, car by car by car, checking their citizenship. Here's the thing. With the new policies that are being instituted right now, they want to make it so, and they'll probably get their way. They want to make it so that if you don't have the papers they're asking for upon request, they'll just hold you. They'll detain you. And if you can't satisfactorily provide that information within a time frame that they think is prudent. They'll deport you to the country of their choice. So here you are, some, you know, white bread resident of New England, right? And they send you to the country that they decide you need to be in, like Bahrain or, you know, Guatemala or someplace where, and you don't have documentation. So what do you think is going to happen to you there? You don't speak the lingo. You don't have documentation. You're going to die. You know, they detained one guy in the Middle East. He was an American. And I don't know why he was there, but he's not military. He's not, he's just a guy who happens to be an American. They've got his credentials. They did not give him back his passport. And they're going to dump him in Syria on the side of the road when they release him with no papers. It is not safe anywhere in Syria, period, for anybody, let alone a white guy who doesn't speak the lingo. This is the kind of people we're dealing with. This is the level of incredulity that you can encounter when you deal with these guys. They're known in political circles as rotten cocksuckers. That's what they are. So, you know, it's America for you, with a K. So America, Forbidden America is going to come back on the air, and you will find more information like this, you know, more commentary, more, some of it will be funny, some of it won't be funny. Tonight wasn't very funny at all because it's just factual. And it's going to be a 30-minute format for a while. It may change. We can do up to 3 hours, but I don't see the point. And I usually have the big studio, but I don't because I'm on the 30-minute format, which means I have to use different equipment, and the audio is not as good. So I apologize for that. But in any event, we're back. And if you are on this page listening to this show, you can look at the other archived shows that we used to do. Listen to those here on the same website on Block Talk Radio. And there's some interesting stuff in there I think you'll find of great interest. Some great guests, worth a listen, worth your time. If you have, you know, if you're working on things or doing homework or even driving in your car, you can listen to them in the background. And they're actually quite entertaining and quite interesting. I recommend it. So I'm going to sign up, and I'm going to decide when to air the next show, but I'll make sure I put it on social networking so you're aware of it. And I'm not sure how often I'll do the show. I used to do it every night, but I don't think that's going to happen. I'll do it 3, 4, or 5 times a week. And again, call in if you need to talk about something, and we'll get that started. And aside from that, I will see you next time on Forbidden America. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it.